Supports for WMNF comes from our members and Frog Song Organics. Each week, Frog Song Organics delivers healthy produce and pasture-raised meats directly to homes and businesses in the Tampa Bay area. More at frogsongorganics.com, featuring seasonal crops, online shopping, and CSA.
This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on the left side of your dial, best little radio station on planet Earth. Dr. Fred is on the phone. Dr. Fred, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today?
Pretty good. I see we're going to have a problem with red tide coming up again.
Looks that way.
Yeah.
Looks like we may have a little hesitation on the phones and such today, too, with a lack of a phone answer.
Well, no, we have one.
We got one.
Oh, yeah. Joe stepped in. He's going to go in there and give us a hand.
Excellent. So, it looks like there's all kinds of stuff happening. I just wanted an update on coronavirus. It looks like the surge is way down here, and we have not that many new cases, 6,400 for the total nation. Florida's still number three, not recording. But, it looks pretty good at the moment. An interesting thing came out about coronavirus masking. They did a survey and study and showed that people that wore a mask at all times were only 11% likely to test positive for COVID-19, but people that never wore it were 23% likely. So over two times the likelihood of getting coronavirus if you never wore a mask compared to people who wore it all the time.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, it's probably much higher than that because the people that never wore a mask also didn't get tested. They only got tested about 12% of the time, whereas 30% of the people that wore the mask all the time did. So there's probably many more people that didn't wear the mask, and there's much more risk for not wearing it. And even for the occasional mask wear, it was still significantly increased. So the masks, we have some pretty good evidence that they worked. And they still work. And so even though people are somewhat vaccinated or inoculated at this point, we still have risks. So we should still be wearing masks indoors if we have not been inoculated.
Yeah, see, that's the way I feel. I mean, at my age and the health problems I have, I stay away from crowds. And I wear a mask anytime. Makes no difference. I did go into Publix about a week ago, and just about everybody in that store had a mask on. And
yeah,
that surprised me.
People still care. It's
yes.
Good. I'm glad there's a lot of compassion out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just feel that. I mean, it's more, isn't it? It's more airborne than anything. Am I right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hand sanitizer is an interesting added help, possibly, but masks are really what work.
Yes. I mean, I have no problem at all. I'm so used to the thing. If I walk out without it, I say, geez, do I have my pants on? It's just
exactly. So,
we've been wearing what for a year, over a year now.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And people that socially distanced, only 10% of those people actually tested positive versus 26% of those who never did social distancing. So
Yeah. Seems
that, the actual public health initiatives work, and we should continue to use those until we know that we're beyond this issue.
Yes,
and,
I feel that way. I feel that way too. I mean, it's not that hard. It's, some people have the idea, okay, well, you're a baby if you wear a mask. And that, to me, that's just a little bit ridiculous. But
it's actually kind of a very strange thinking, because adults wear masks to protect other people from a asymptomatic infection.
Yes.
That's really the key there. So that's where compassion comes in. I think it's really good that we seem to be getting it under control here, but the rest of the world is still flailing. India is still way up there. Russia's not doing well at all. They had like 9,000 new cases yesterday.
wow.
So India's still up there. Iran has 5,000 new cases. Indonesia, so around the world where they're not getting inoculations, there's still a lot of spread. they probably don't have a lot of social distancing and masks in many of those countries, too, because they don't have a lot of money.
Right, that's so true. India's, you know, there's so many people over there.
Yes.
The population is unbelievable.
It truly is. They have about four times our population.
Yeah.
And it's probably not even getting reported as much as they suggest, according to some of the other studies. Another thing that came up today I thought was a really interesting thing going into the future, or currently the red tide, you mentioned it, near the Piney Point leak or disgorgement, there seems to be red tide. They're not directly connecting it to the toxic effluvium that came out of the Piney Point, but it seems kind of likely that there's a huge amount of red tide there with some fish dioxide. So,
yes,
got to keep watching for that. It's here. So people with respiratory conditions around Tampa Bay need to be aware that they could get triggered by the brevetoxin.
Yes, that's true.
Another interesting article that crossed my desk was something that has been bothering me for some time, the use of stimulants like methylphenidate, otherwise known as Ritalin, for people with the symptomatic disorder described as ADHD.
Yes, I'm well aware of
ADD.
It.
ADD.
Mm.
Yeah.
I have a sister-in-law that they use that when she's 50, and technically she's like 15. It just affected her so bad. I mean, she just can't make decisions. And it's a shame, you know, that stuff destroyed her.
And this was one about actually, one thing that we don't take into account in medication usage and in toxicity around the planet is that when we have toxins such as the petrochem toxins in the environment or these drugs, we have something called epigenetic change. Epigenetics are the on and off switches for the genes. And they have shown here that several generations into the future, some animals experience differences in behavior after having the grandparents and the great-grandparents been exposed to the Ritalin, so that the great-grandchildren actually experience behavioral changes
really
induced by taking the Ritalin in their grandparents.
Wow.
The great-grandchildren are not exposed to the drug. They experience the same behavioral changes that the other generations did, which is a real eye-opener because every person on Ritalin today is potentially affecting their children's children's children.
Yes, yes. I didn't realize that. My goodness, that's pretty strong stuff then, isn't it?
It really is amazing what we are doing to affect future generations. And actually what it seems to do is it makes males more bold. They're more fearless.
Hmm.
And they don't seem to have as many inhibitions and take precautions going into dangerous environments. And so I think we need to really pay attention what we're doing here and medicating youth with medications that aren't really actually necessary. When we find out what causes the symptomatic disorder, ADHD, and there are lots of different reasons, we can treat it without using those chemical medications to override what the brain is supposed to do. What's happening is the brain is not doing what it's supposed to do because of different influences, and there are many, but even eating gluten products when you're gluten sensitive could do it. Sugar is not necessarily causative, but if you eat the sugar associated with other things like artificial dyes or gluten, you might actually be inducing things because it's not just one chemical that does this. It's not just one thing that makes ADHD. It's numerous things. It's a toxic burden that changes the way the brain thinks. And we need to take the time to actually look at what causation is rather than just simply treating the symptom with a stimulant.
Yes, yes. Did you get that email? I just want to make sure we're
let me just check
functioning
here.
Correctly.
There we go. Good. We have a new one. Dr. Fred, how do you know whether you have vertigo? My partner has been experiencing dizziness and nausea at around the same time in the evening when going to bed. what causes this and what can he do to alleviate it? Does it go away for some and not for others? Also, what are your thoughts regarding those who are fully vaccinated and not wearing a mask? I still wear one when shopping. It still feels safer for me, especially since not all of in my household are vaccinated. So, two questions. So, vertigo. Vertigo is a dizziness symptom. It feels like the room is spinning, and it usually is associated with nausea. Sometimes it can be due to an inheritable disease called Meniere's disease, Meniere's, which is an ongoing problem that induces vertigo in people and is not really treatable because it's a nervous disorder, but it can be alleviated to some extent. There are several things you can do to help. Actually, other things could be involved here. There could be toxicity. There could be other medical problems. Sometimes the vertigo symptoms are induced by a virus that affects what's called the labyrinth, or the part of the ear that is associated with determining your position in space. So creating a sense of dizziness is something that happens when that organ is not functioning well. Sometimes if it is acute, steroids can help to reduce it. Sometimes magnesium does. Sometimes it's toxicity from other sources, like in your gut, yeast toxins like tartaric acid can actually induce this. There's a lot of different things involved, but if it's just a brief problem, over-the-counter trip nausea medicines, you know, the motion sickness medicines like Bonine or Dramamine, they can be useful to help alleviate it, but I think a neurologic evaluation is worthwhile. And regarding the mask, we just talked about it. I think that if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask, but you still can get the illness, and you can still carry the illness asymptomatically. However, you're not probably going to transmit it. The research seems to say that you're not going to be spreading it. So the people at home probably wouldn't get it from you if you got an asymptomatic infection, which is why the CDC said that those who have been inoculated can actually go mask-free indoors. Hope that helps. We have another one here from Jeff. Recently, I've been hearing about gain-of-function research in the news. For this kind of research, do you think benefits outweigh the risks, or do the risks outweigh the benefits? Well, I'm not sure what we're actually referring. Which function are we gaining? And so, what is gain-of-function specifically related to? Wuhan lab, possibly? Not really sure. I'll have to do a little bit more research on that one, because I have not read about it at this point. Anonymous sent us a notice saying that latest news on Novavax is targeting a September approval. Assuming additional time for marketing and establishing providers, wouldn't this actually release much later than September? Does this concur with your sources? I have not looked at it since I've been on vacation for 2 weeks. I really haven't paid attention to the news. So I'm not sure when it's going to be released. Last I heard, they were going to push for at least preliminary, like this week or next week. But we'll have to find out. Frank, do we have anybody on the phone?
No, nobody yet at all. Okay. And I agree with that, Alexandria. The way she said that is exactly the way I am. I still wear a mask. You know, for my own benefit, and just like they say, you can get it. I have both shots, and you can get it again. So I've never had it, thank God. So, you know, but now the only thing we're getting is emails.
Yes, exactly. So here's a new one from Don. Please ask Dr. Harvey if he endorses the use of ivermectin as a prophylactic treatment for COVID-19. No, I do not, because it's not a prophylactic treatment for COVID-19. However, ivermectin might have some anti-inflammatory properties that reduce the effect of COVID-19, but it doesn't prevent the infection, and it is not available as a human medication. There's a similar one. It's about $600 a pill. One of those hedge fund people bought it up and decided to jack the price from $6 to $600. And so the human medication is not available. Ivermectin is a pet medication. Frankly, I think there are lots of alternative treatments for the prevention of COVID-19, and I've talked about them many times on the show. You start with vitamin D, 10,000 units a day, and you take vitamin C, 3,000 milligrams a day, and you take a little extra zinc, maybe 20 milligrams a day. And you can use immune boosters that help stabilize the system, like elderberry, a couple times a week, and also quercetin. 500 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day is very good for stabilizing the mast cells and the blood vessels. And also, curcumin is a great stabilizer for the inflammatory systems. All of these things help to prevent the seriousness of a COVID-19 inflammatory response to the coronavirus infection. I hope that helps. A new question about Ritalin, I think. Let's see. Does the chemical actually alter one's genes, and that's why spastic? No, that's a different concept. It's actually epigenetic. So your gene structure is going to stay the same. Your genetic DNA is not going to be altered. But what happens is you turn on and off switches in the genome, which are called the epigenome, and they are codes for whether or not a specific gene will be utilized at a specific point in time. And the Ritalin and other things, many other things, will alter the way you actually have these switches turned on and off. Methylation is a real key way of keeping most of these switches that could cause damage in a harmless position. And methylation comes from using methylated vitamins like methylcobalamin or methyl B12 or methylfolate, which is methylfolic acid. Those are methyl donors that help protect the DNA and also help keep your genes reading the right way rather than reading the inflammatory way. Another question this person had was pure speculation. Perhaps the ransomware attack on JBS was orchestrated by PETA or Greenpeace. Not sure what JBS is, but I don't know that PETA or Greenpeace does these kinds of things. Oh, it's a meat supply thing. Yeah, it would be interesting if PETA would attack a meat supply chain, but that is pure speculation. Very interesting. Thanks, David.
We do have a couple of phone calls now. First, Andy from Arcadia.
Hello, Andy.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for the show, and it's great to hear you loud and clear. You must have a powerful antenna. It comes in clear down in Arcadia.
Excellent.
I occasionally work in Olga and LaBelle, inland from Fort Myers, and I've stopped working there because the stench from the blue-green algae, and I look it up, and of course, the microcystine levels, the day I was there at the Franklin Lock working, was 1,600 times the allowable amount. I just want to talk about can you recommend solutions? I'll give a shout-out to Calusa Waterkeeper on their website, who put out daily posts, keep us alerted down this way. But Governor DeSantis showed up with that company, Blue Green Water Technologies, and they were sprinkling that algicide, Lake Guard Oxy. Well, I looked into Professor Bill Mitch, who I look up to in Naples area. He says it's such a broad-spectrum algicide that it can kill a lot of species. And the day before, they had seen a critically endangered sawfish there. So I'm just concerned, why are we not treating the cause instead of the symptoms? Why are we not rewilding rivers, planting mangroves? Why are we spraying algicide on things? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, it's the reductionist way that our society looks at any problem. It treats the symptom. It doesn't treat the cause. And my entire former profession, I consider that I've moved on from the practice of Western medicine. They all look for a solution to a symptom. It's a linear name it, blame it, tame it game. You know, you find a possible problem, name it, blame it, and make some solution for that. That doesn't work. The solution really is, if you look upstream at the issues with the blue-green algae in our fresh water, it's actually the problem with Big Sugar, more than likely. The amount of fertilizer that's going on to Florida is crazy. Also, fertilizing grass. All this runoff is going into our aquifer. It's going into these areas and causing this problem. We need to rethink the entire way we do agriculture. Lawns should likely be banned in this state make no sense.
Yes, I saw a report that the biggest nitrogen load in Lake Okeechobee is actually from floodplains where the cattle ranchers are allowed in this country, not all countries of the world, they're allowed to defecate in flood zones. And then, so the big nitrogen load, because Professor Bill Mitch is an isotope tracer, so he's proven that the nitrogen, the big piece of the pie is big sugar's terrible, but big cattle is terrible too.
Yes.
And people don't even talk, so we need to push the cattle back, create buffer zones. There's so much we have to do rather than these Band-Aid approaches. Really gets annoying down here.
It's really about rethinking our entire approach to both animal and plant agriculture. We need to do it the right way. We can look back to the Native Americans and see what they did to treat the land.
Yes. Well, thanks. I run a little place called Bamboo Grove. We've given away 150,000 trees in the area, so we're doing our little part, you know, to
keep planting trees.
I think that's where it's at.
Yes, I agree.
But thank you for the show. And if you once in a while check Colusa Waterkeeper Facebook page or website, there, it's alarming the amounts of microcystine they're detecting from the blue-green algae. It's a great neurotoxin and liver toxin. It's horrible.
Exactly. It's horrible.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you.
And we have Dawn from St. Pete, and last show topic was diet, and she wants to talk about that.
Okay. Hi, Dawn.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, sorry. So I caught your last show, and I don't even know what the mine's kind of a comment, what the question was that the caller had asked, but you mentioned that avocados were a high histamine food and could cause heartburn.
Yeah.
And I have suffered with chronic heartburn for years. I've eliminated gluten. I keep eliminating things from my diet. And some of the things, when I looked up, because of hearing what you said, I looked up high histamine foods. I had never even really heard of it. And tomato, spinach, avocado, I ate them every single day.
Oh, my.
And then I also looked up, because I drank multiple cups of green tea, because it's supposed to be so good for me, which it is, but it also, I read that it also can block an enzyme that helps your body to process histamine.
Yes,
so
it blocks diamine oxidase. It blocks diamine oxidase.
Right. So I had no idea of this. So it was 2 weeks ago I heard that on your show. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to cut these things out of my diet and see what happens. And I have not had heartburn since.
Congratulations.
So it's an amazing relief. Like, just a couple days now, I'll have, like, one cup of a weak green tea, and I sip it over a long period of time. I'm not, you know, drinking multiple cups a day anymore. Now, I guess the only question I would have with that is, since I've corrected this with diet, and from what I read, it said it takes 3 weeks to kind of clear your system of this, and then to do, like, adding one food at a time. There's also a lot of other causes that could be involved in it. Is there any other testing that I should possibly do, or just kind of go with it on the diet?
Well, if you're successful with a diet and you're okay with it, then I would say just stick with that. It's cheaper and easier. However, if you want to find out, there are some labs that actually can test your DAO level. See if you have enough of that enzyme, because there is evidence. I do some genomic work also, and I have found people that actually are missing, or they're not really completely missing, but they have abnormal genes coding for that enzyme. So the enzyme isn't deficient. And actually, I've seen one instance of someone who is missing one of the genes, so they only made one copy of it, so they had less of it. There's a bunch of genetic things that could happen, and then you can have all kinds of toxins and other things that would deactivate it. Plus, if you get a damage to the lining of your small intestine, you can actually lose some of that ability, because it's made in the cells in the lining of your intestine. Some people, adults that get a gastroenteritis, might suddenly have lactose intolerance, because the lactase enzyme is very similar to the diamine oxidase enzyme. They're both made in the lining of the gut. And so if you damage that, you can actually get this problem transiently. So you may actually make more diamine oxidase again after 3 or 4 weeks of not insulting the lining of the gut. And then you might find that you can tolerate a little bit of the food a little bit of the time, like have an avocado once a week and not get heartburn from it. That might occur. But then, yeah, we can do testing. So if you find a functional doctor, you could do some testing too.
Well, if I were in Sarasota, I would come to you.
Excellent.
One other comment. There was an email that someone was asking me about gain of function lab.
Yes.
I believe I've seen that in the past couple of days. I believe it was a Tucker Carlson talking point.
Oh.
And that's why it's the mainstream.
Yes. So he's rather mainstream something, but I won't mention it.
Well, exactly.
We can change one letter in his first name and make it what he really is.
exactly. Anyway, that's all. And thank you very much for your show.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
You too.
I have an email here from a 70-year vegan in good health and on no meds. And her doctor wants her on vitamin D. So vitamin D is supposedly made by our skin or by the sun after we sweat cholesterol onto our skin. Problem is we bathe after we get sunlight exposure, so we tend not to have a lot of vitamin D. I've tested hundreds of people. The one issue I see with a vegan taking vitamin D is usually many of the ones I've seen are derived from lanolin, so it comes from sheep. But there are vegan sources for D3, and it does make sense to take some. However, you can get a blood level. Get a test. If your blood level's over 50, you're in pretty good shape. But if it's not, then you probably should consider taking some vitamin D. Do we have anybody else on the phone?
Yes, we do. Robert from Mulberry.
Excellent.
Hello, Robert. Thank you for taking my question. My question is this. About once a month, I make myself this wild green called poke weed. And I know that it has an excess concentration of vitamin A, so you have to boil it out 2 times to remove that. But supposedly it has antiviral qualities and other health benefits. Do you know of any of these things, and if it's something I should try to continue to eat monthly or more frequently, because it's a weed and it grows like one. I've got it growing all over my backyard. Thank you.
So you're very welcome. When I first heard of pokeweed many years ago, I heard of it as a weed and as a poison. And that opinion hasn't been changed for me by anything I've read. It seems to be poisonous to mammals. Birds seem to be able to eat some of their berries, but we shouldn't be eating any of it, I don't think. I'd rather use many of the other different ones, but, you know, it has been used in the past. It's a traditional Southern Appalachian food. So, if you boil it a couple times, I don't know how often I would eat it. I don't really know enough about it because I just learned that it was toxic and we didn't eat the stuff.
Okay, thank you, doctor. Maybe I'll just eat regular collard greens and mustard greens.
They are so healthy for you. I think it might make sense.
Okay, thank you.
You're so welcome, Robert.
Okay, let's see here. We have Eileen in Clearwater.
Hello, Eileen.
Hello. I'm calling about an earlier comment. Someone was asking about having experienced nausea and vertigo at sort of regular times of day for an ongoing period of time. And
yes.
In my experience, what that was epilepsy. It was the precursor to an eventual full-blown epileptic seizure, but at regular times of day, literally, and they were typically right in the morning and then at the end of the day, I would have these very intense feelings of nausea and vertigo, and then a sense of sort of disorientation and confusion when those were over. And as I came to learn, those were manifestations of epilepsy.
Mm. Yes, I think that's a really good point, and that's why I suggested to that caller he should get a neurologic evaluation or that email. It's really important to find out what the cause of this is.
Yes, it was very serious. So I thank you very much. I listen to your show every week, and I appreciate you taking my call.
So glad to. Have a great day, Ellen.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we have one more. Chris from Clearwater talking about the COVID-19 shot.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, I had a few points to make. For one, I find it very concerning that those taking blood donations, like the Red Cross, you can see on their own website, does not accept convalescent plasma donors from the vaccinated because they say it will not help COVID-19 patients recover because it doesn't have, of course, the antibodies. And it's unfortunate that an EUA, emergency use authorization treatment like that, is being nullified, and people's ability to help COVID patients recover is further being harmed. And I would like to see if you would like to, Dr., research and comment on the government's own, the CDC and FDA-run statistical database, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, that's showing over 5,000 deaths from the COVID-19 shots, which is shockingly over all the other adverse events and deaths from all other vaccines combined for the last 20 years, just in the last 5 months of the COVID-19 shots. And, you know, when we shut down the swine flu shot, that was when less than 50 people had died. So kind of alarming there. And you know, when the gain-of-function term is really a term that mad scientists, I think, devised because it should be called gain-of-dysfunction, it involves increasing the functionality of viruses, genetic engineering. And you'd probably also be interested in the Fauci emails that there are two sets, or three sets, that were released from Freedom of Information Act requests this past week from BuzzFeed, Washington Post, and then from Informed Consent Action Network, which seems to have the most damning, but they're all very damning, where Fauci was admitting in his emails that, yes, the COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus could have been genetically engineered, but at the same time, he was telling the public the opposite. And other things, you know, his saying that masks are ineffective, except for those who are sick, and, you know, cloth masks that people are buying, he's writing, are not effective. Of course, we already knew that. The medical masks are the only thing that should be shown effective. And you know, unless someone is sick, they shouldn't wear a quality mask in order to, you know, I'm somewhat paraphrasing.
You're paraphrasing something from a year ago where he was actually being a politician and not a health guidance person, and was falling in line with the idiot orange man who was telling people that masks weren't effective anyway. And it was all part of this whole thing to cover up
the
issues
emails,
of keeping
Fauci,
it up. But anyway,
Fauci said that he was under no pressure from Donald Trump, if you look at the emails.
Yeah, I understand. But the problem was he was under pressure from an entire community that he was working with, and he made really bad decisions. I don't trust Dr. Fauci to say anything any longer. After all this laboring and BS, I don't think he's actually a very good spokesperson for any of this stuff. I don't trust what he says because he has wavered on too many things. So Fauci, I don't think he's a good source to actually discuss what's going on here.
Well, you know, all the different doctors I've seen, I think Dr. Peter McCullough, check out Dr. Peter McCullough, really summarizes it the best from the many different doctors who've been, you know, medical professionals, scientists I've been looking at over the many, over a year now, who are criticizing the various governments' overreaction to COVID-19 and suppressing early treatments and not investigating drug cocktails and CDC,
FDA. Many of these drug cocktails were investigated, and they were shown to be somewhat effective and not effective, and there's actually really good information about there. And there's also good information that the convalescent plasma doesn't work. So it seems to be irrelevant that we would be discussing a treatment that doesn't work. The monoclonal antibodies work, but the convalescent plasma didn't work. So what's the point of actually using it or collecting it from people?
Well, I would like to know that research, but yes, monoclonal antibodies are, from what I see, beyond reproach, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, they were.
The CDC, NIH, and FDA, you know, these proven drugs like hydroxychloroquine, they're citing studies from a shady organization called Seristat, you know, retracted
yeah,
study.
Yeah, we've had
too
that
much
discussion, too. We've had that discussion, too, and hydroxychloroquine does improve inflammation. It's not a treatment for coronavirus or specifically COVID-19. It helps to mitigate, as does steroids, as may ivermectin. But we don't have any, it doesn't treat anything specifically. None of these things do. We know that. They actually reduce inflammation. We don't even know how. That's the one of the more interesting things about disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs is that we don't know how they work for some of them, like the hydroxychloroquine. Like, it just reduces inflammation. No one's given me it ever in all the reading I've done for 30 years, a specific mechanism. So,
it's just all the policies that started out and not empowering the people. And now injecting pregnant women and children, and even, you know, they were never in the studies, injecting those who have recovered, and there's three studies showing it harms them, and also testing to see if they have natural immunity before they give them the shot. They were never in these studies, and, you know, the children down to 12 were never in the study. They were down to 16 in the studies.
And we really don't have enough information about these things, and they've been released before actually being approved. I mean, it's emergency use authorization is an interesting approach, but we don't have the clinical studies finished yet, which has been my suggestion all along on the show. It's like, where's the data?
I really encourage you to look at all the adverse events and the spike protein.
Oh, I do.
The synthetic spike protein itself is causing a lot of damage, including women's uteruses being shed because.
I'm not sure I'm seeing this specific data. What I'm seeing, though, is a lot of adverse events reported on the CDC's website.
Okay.
But I thank you for your input. I'd really like to move on to somebody else because we've got 15 minutes left and I'd like to answer some more questions.
Thank you. Take great care.
Thank you. You too. Have a great day. So I have an email here from Nina in Sarasota. Once diagnosed with osteoporosis, any supplements you would recommend? Of course, all kinds of things. But one of the key things for osteoporosis is that you need to move. Human bodies are designed to exercise every day. Without weight-bearing exercise, we don't actually fix the osteoporosis. The places we're most concerned about osteoporosis fractures are hips and backs. And so squats and lunges are some of the best exercises you can do every day to help strengthen hips and back. And then supplemental protein must get at least 35% of your body weight in protein grams per day. So if you weigh 100 pounds, you want 35 grams of protein per day to make sure you maintain bones, skin, hair, and nails. And if you already have osteoporosis, you should probably look at getting somewhere in the vicinity of 50%, 50 grams. You want to get 50 grams of protein a day to build back your bone if you weigh 100 pounds. If you weigh 150 pounds, you want 75 grams. Protein is key for building bone matrix strength, and it's the protein matrix to which the calcium is attached. So then my favorite calcium is bone calcium, hydroxyapatite. It's calcium pyrophosphate, and it's a really it's bone calcium, so it works really well. It's derived from New Zealand or other calf bones usually, but calcium citrate's a very good choice, too, for someone who's vegan or vegetarian. A little magnesium to balance that out is good. At least 5,000 units of vitamin D a day, 125 micrograms. And you might want to take some other minerals, like just a good multivitamin with multi-minerals to help support. The only strontium that is studied is called strontium ranelite. Strontium shows up as recommendations in a lot of things, but it's not available in America as the drug strontium ranelate. It's only available with strontium citrate and other things like that. And so I don't know that they have effect. I know that strontium ranelate does. So calcium, vitamin D, protein, and exercise are my key recommendations there.
Now we have Clay from Land O'Lakes on the phone.
Hello, Clay.
Greetings. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the excellent show. I look forward to you being on every week soon. So the availability of Novavax in the United States, do you got any more information on that yet?
All I have so far is what the previous emailer or caller said, that it's supposedly going to be released in September. And I have not been reading much of the news until I got back into town yesterday. So it may be that it is pushed off until then. It seems like there's a lot of delays for this for some reason.
Okay, well, you know, I don't understand that. But, you know, I wear a mask. I just want people to know. Whenever I go into a store or anything like that, I'm surprised how many people are unmasked. But whenever I'm around people, closed places, I still wear a mask. I'm going to until this is over. I'm not sure when it's going to be over.
I'm not sure either, and I'll be wearing the mask too.
All right, well, thanks again for the show. You guys do a great job. Peace be upon you. Stay healthy.
Thank you, you too.
And we have Stan from Mulberry. He said his wife broke her kneecap.
Hello, Stan.
Yes, my wife fell and shattered her kneecap. And they got it put back together, we hope, you know. And I was wondering what would help maybe heal with the bone and a shattered kneecap.
Well, after the surgery, I would suggest some calcium and good protein intake, vitamin D. All those things are really important. At least 5,000 units of D, 1,000 milligrams of calcium. Whatever her weight is, I would say at least 50% of her body weight in pounds in protein grams per day. So
great.
If she's 150, get her on 75 grams of protein a day to make sure that heals.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Excellent. Hey, I got an email here from someone who says, Poke Salad Annie knows about pokeweed. Not sure who she is, but this person also says we need some progressive leadership in Tallahassee. I agree completely.
It was in a song. Oh, brother.
So, where did the caller get the number 5,000 deaths from COVID vaccines? Jackie asked. And that's on the website wonder.cdc.gov. And when you go to that wonder.cdc.gov, on the first page at the bottom, you can see under population, vaccine adverse event reporting. And when you click on there, you have to scroll to the bottom and agree to the fact that you have an understanding their disclaimer. And then you have to go over to the request form. And then you have to put into the request forms under, rather than symptoms, vaccine type and by event category. And then if you scroll down to the number three, select vaccine characteristics, and you click on COVID-19 vaccine, and you leave it clicked on all dates and press send at the bottom of the page, you can see right now today, events reported. These are just reported on the site. I can't say they were investigated, but there were 4,763 deaths, 5,595 life-threatening, 4,243 permanent disabilities, 18,749 hospitalized, and a total of 331,859 reported events. So there's a lot going on there. For the total for flu, when I looked 2 weeks ago, it was 10,000 total events reported versus 331,000, and there were 40 deaths versus 4,763 for the same amount of shots in the same amount of time. Very interesting numbers. So feel free to look it up, wonder.cdc.gov. So everybody else on the phone there, Frank?
No, we do have some open lines for people to call in.
So we do have somebody sent us some more information on Novavax. It says it is a Herculean effort, it looks like they're on track to be ready for October now instead of for July, like they said a month and a half ago. So, yeah, it's getting pushed back. For some reason, they don't want this vaccine to get out there. That's just a facetious aside. There is no evidence for anything like that. I just would love to know why it keeps getting pushed back. They were so excited about getting it out like May.
Yeah, you don't know. It's obviously they've run into a few problems.
Sounds like that. It could be manufacturing because it seems like the actual vaccine worked because they were getting like 85 to 90% efficacy.
Hmm.
So not sure what's going on there.
Yeah, well, all you can say is it'll be here when it gets here. and because they keep it quiet, not saying why any problems. But you're right, though. I think getting it together and getting it out on the market might be a lot of the problem.
Yes, I think it's actually the manufacturing issue, probably. They're running into snafus there, it seems. So as far as the problems with the overall public health rollout of this pandemic approach, there could have been a lot more done to promote good public health. It was wavered on way too much at the beginning.
Yes.
And the emails that Fauci said he was not pressured. I'm not sure what he was pressured by, but he made some really bad decisions because he even admitted that he told people not to wear the masks because he was afraid that there wouldn't be enough available for healthcare workers. Well, that's fear-based decision-making, and fear-based decision-making tends to go awry pretty often.
Yes, it does.
I don't know why a guy who was, that many years in public health would be afraid of a pandemic, but he made some bad decisions, and we're all paying for that. But the fact that so many Americans don't care is another big part of it. They don't believe anything that comes from any source other than the one they deem is their source. And unfortunately, many of these sources are skewed to ridiculous idiocy.
Yeah.
We know that Fox News lies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have three phone calls, Dr. Phil.
All right, let's talk.
John from Fort Myers.
Hello.
Hello, John.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good, good. My questions are about magnesium. My brother and my sister both had aneurysms, and we have six children, so I think that's kind of a weird medical thing. But my real question is, they both suffered from severe depression, and then they found out that they need to take massive amounts of magnesium because their body uses up magnesium to a huge amount of it, and they take a lot of magnesium, and it makes them normal. They don't have depression, severe depression. My question is I've read that people who take magnesium can reduce or eliminate their depression symptoms. Is that correct?
Well, actually, magnesium does help to calm the nervous system. It seems to be most effective on anxious moods, but anxious moods tend to make people depressed long term. So in a roundabout way, it probably would help with the overall depressive mood problem. And magnesium facilitates something like 350 to 400 different enzymatic reactions in the body. So if you're depleted in magnesium or you don't absorb it well or you lose it too much, you might actually have failed functional systems, which need a boost. And, yeah, so magnesium can really help a lot in emotional problems.
Okay. And then I read a lot of books about the benefits of health foods and chemicals or minerals, I should say. And my nephew's wife's child has autism. And two of these books said that taking magnesium, I think it's vitamin B12 and calcium, helps people with autism.
Well, that's an interesting concept. It's not going to really treat it or cure it, but, people with autism have a lot of emotional things going on, and it may stabilize some of that.
Okay. Yeah, that's about what the two authors had said, that it makes them more controllable, more manageable people.
Yeah, it calms them down.
Okay. All right. And my last thing is that somebody had said something about they were sensitive to certain things, a previous caller, I think the second or third previous caller. My wife had LGS, leaky gut syndrome, and she had a complete makeup on everything of a whole list of foods. I think it was three pages long, maybe 100, 120 different foods. And she found out she was extremely sensitive to almonds, and she used to eat those about a handful every day for many, many decades, and eliminating that helped out. The other big thing that we found out was a trigger was xanthan gum, X-A-X-A-T-H-A-M gum.
Yeah.
I would warn people to read the ingredients because many foods contain it, and it's a very reactive, allergic substance in people's body.
Yes, it can be. So thanks for that point.
So definitely have a complete makeup of what you might be allergic to. I don't know the name of the test, but anyways, it was very helpful to us. And
yes.
I think you should have a show on leaky gut syndrome because many Americans have this and it's treated with proton inhibitors, and I think it's the wrong way to go.
I agree with you. Changing the food is the important way to go.
Yeah, but LGS is a very common element, especially when you get over 50 years of age. We're retired people, so we're quite familiar with it. Our friends have a lot of the symptoms of LGS, and they're treated with the proton inhibitors, and their symptoms are a little bit better, but it doesn't cure them, which most pharmaceuticals do not cure you.
No, because they keep doing the same things over and over again, expecting a different result. The pill doesn't change the result.
Right. I think that was Albert Einstein that said that.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
We have Marie in Largo.
Hello, Marie.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Wonderful, wonderful show as usual. Doctor, I was wondering, I had heard something. Everybody thinks because a year has gone by, the viruses should lighten up with the masks, and the virus doesn't know time. Time is irrelevant. I heard that people who have been vaccinated can still be carriers of COVID.
I'm sorry? What was the question again?
People who have had vaccinations can still be carriers of COVID, even though they're vaccinated.
So the truth on that one is that people who have had inoculation and have apparent antibodies can still get infected, but they can't transmit the virus according to what studies are showing. So they may have an asymptomatic infection or a mildly symptomatic one, but it's not likely they're going to transmit it to anyone else because the inoculation has given them antibodies that prevent that transfer.
It's most likely, but we're not very sure, huh?
Well, we have research studies that show that that's true. And so what you said about carriage doesn't really fit with anything we know scientifically about the way these viruses work. But it could happen. There's a far outlying possibility that, that could be the case.
So we should still be on our guard and still protect each other. It's just, not asking.
Yeah, we should. But it's really okay
question, if you don't mind.
If you have your inoculation, you don't have to wear the mask inside because you're not going to transmit it.
One more question, if I could. Plastic bottles that are shipped in warm trucks cross-country to
not
everybody.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea because the plastic does leach out. See, people, when they get their bottles and they stick them in their refrigerator and it's nice and cold, they don't realize that there's little plastic particles. Am I correct?
That's correct. What you want to do is actually do glass bottles.
Yes. That's what I do, but I just want to put it out there that, people are great water drinkers, and they need to recycle. God bless you all. Thank you. Have a wonderful
week. Thanks, Marie. You too.
We have one more call, David from Melrose, and we've got about a minute and a half left at the most.
All right, David.
Good morning to both of you. My subject is ADHD. My best friend has a bad case of it. He's on Adderall. I don't see that it's doing any good. I'm told that sugar is very bad for people with ADHD. He eats a lot of sweets. I want to try to get you. Do you think that's true about the sugar? And do you have any suggestions on what he could do or what I can do to help him? I'm getting worn out from the whole thing.
I hear you. ADHD and all psychiatric diagnoses are essentially symptom diagnoses. There are no actual specific diagnostic criteria in images or in laboratory values that determine someone's ADHD illness. And so there are lots of different causes, and it can be treated lots of different ways, but Ritalin may cover the symptoms and help people function day to day, but stopping the gluten and the sugar and the caffeine may actually be the answer.
Stopping sugar, caffeine, and
gluten.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And any of these articles I've cited can be actually obtained. I sent them to the DJ. Maybe they can forward to people that asked about them.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Fred.
Thank you.
You want to stay tuned for NPR News, and I know there was a lot of good done today on this show. So. This is WMNF Tampa.